Bring your greetings in the name of God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Turning your Bibles to Luke chapter 15. Luke's Gospel chapter 15 is actually a chapter of three parables, very much connected. The first one is about the lost sheep, and the second one is about the lost coin, and the third one about the lost son. So I've chosen to read that story, part of it, this morning. So Luke chapter 15, we'll start reading in verse 11. A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine, and he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found.' And they began to be merry." And we'll stop there. So this is one of Jesus' many parables that he spoke with to teach his people. There are many lessons we can learn from this. And I think the lesson that we most commonly learn or hear about is, you know, consequences of wastefully the prodigal lifestyle, just spending money on parties and wasting it. But it's also a good example of how when he hit rock bottom, he came to his senses. It says he came to himself. And there, you know, we can picture him in the pig pen drafting his resignation speech to his father, saying, "I'm no longer worthy to actually be your son. Just make me like one of your servants." I think a beautiful phrase is when he says he arose and came to his father. And I think all of our father hearts, you know, when our sons do that, it just warms us, because that's a beautiful thing. He knew where to go. He knew what to say. At least he was planning on what to say. But when he got there, when he got back, his father had other plans. His father didn't let him finish his resignation speech. You know what he did? He commanded for the best robe to be brought out, ring to be brought, sandals, commanded the fattened calf to be killed, and the celebrations to begin. There was great joy when his lost son came back home. So I'd like to analyze this parable a little closer yet this morning, and maybe identify, you can help me with this, let's identify the main characters. Who are the people? Somebody just shout out, who are the people in this story?
The son.
The father. The older brother, we didn't get there, but we know the story, yeah. The servants. We have to dig a little deeper, get a little more. There's another person inferred here, not name, mentioned by name, of course. The employer, the hog owner. He's also part of this story. That's all I could find, unless you could find someone else. So we have these few main characters. What are the main events? What happened? What transpired in this story? Squandered his wealth. Anything else? He rejected his background. Exactly. For a time, but he came back to it then too, didn't he? So his return is another event. You see anything else?
He ran out.
Ran?
He ran out.
So. Away from his father. And
he ran out, and then he ran out of money.
He ran out of money, yes. Ran out of money. Yes, major event. Yes.
He became discontented before he ever left.
So he was discontent before he ever left. Good point.
But his path led him to God more than the older, almost more than the older brother's path, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I agree with you. The problem is the story ends before we know what the older brother did. We didn't read that part. But as far as the story is concerned, it shows about the younger son's return, but not the older son. In fact, there were two lost sons. The older son was lost as well, even though he stayed there. Yeah, yeah, that's a fair assumption. Or. Fair point, yeah.
Kind of looking at a bit, we didn't have the reading, but I think you could look at it in these terms as well. When he says to the older son, all I have is yours. Mm-hmm. You have not squandered your inheritance. Shape up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very good. We haven't touched on the father and his compassion. How he ran, picked up his robes, and ran to the son. I understand this was a very unheard of thing to do. The men would not run in this culture. But the father and his compassion and his celebration is something to behold. There is so much so much in this parable, and I know it's not been too long since we heard a sermon on this before, but there's so much to learn that that's why it's so popular. It's probably one of the most popular of Jesus' parables. But in just studying it again myself, I came away with new insights. Something, you know, we can all identify some character in this story that connects with ourselves. We can learn from it. But back to parables, Jesus used parables like this to teach theology. You know, we were wrestling through Philippians this morning, and Paul systematically argues his theological cases, and that's all well and good. Jesus, to my knowledge, never really did that. He tried to explain his theology through stories, through parables, and through this parable, we can learn so many theological aspects of God and and Jesus. You know, Jesus didn't tell parables just to entertain people. He didn't tell parables just for the art of storytelling, although he was very good at it. He taught theology through the metaphors in these parables. So the question we should be asking is, So what theology is Jesus teaching here in this parable? If you could put theological subjects or define them, what would they be? And you touched on some of them already. I just have another list here. The nature and fatherhood of God. His grace and compassion. You could talk about salvation from a sinful lifestyle. You could talk about self-righteousness and how it rejects love in relation to the older brother. Here's a big one. You could talk about the importance of community or rejecting it. What is true repentance? How should we seek the lost? Or what about when God speaks through famine? Maybe that's not theology. I wonder if you can go back about 15 minutes before I came up here, and if I would ask you to raise your hands, how many of you would have said the story of the prodigal son includes a famine? Includes a famine. Mention of a famine. How many would raise your hands? 3, 4, 5, 6. Very good. Because if I would have been asked that, I wouldn't have raised my hand. I would have said, no, there's no famine. Prodigal son doesn't involve a famine. It's about wasteful living. It's about the father coming out and welcoming home his son. It's about the older brother. But there's details that we often miss, and I'd like to pick up on that here just a minute, maybe digress a bit from the text, but to bring out this point that bring in a professor from Columbus, Ohio. He's a professor of the New Testament, Mark Allen Powell, as a seminary professor, and he had 12 of his students read this story carefully and then close their Bibles and recount this story to someone else. None of the 12 students said anything about a famine. So he found this interesting, and he organized a larger experiment. He took 100 people, read the story, had them close their Bibles, recount it to another 100 people, and 6 people out of the 100 mentioned a famine. That's about how many people raised their hands here this morning. Now, all of these people, 100 people, had one thing in common. They're from the United States. Sorry about that, Americans. So he decided, okay, it was a very diverse group, ethnically, racially, so on and so forth, but they were all from the States. So later, Mr. Powell had an opportunity to try this experiment again outside America. This was in St. Petersburg, Russia. He gathered 50 people together. He didn't have as big a group, only 50 people. Did the same thing, and how many do you think mentioned the famine? 84%. Mentioned the famine of the Russians. So in his finding, he discovered that 100% of Americans would have said the story was about squandering his wealth, but only 6% mentioned a famine. In Russia, 34% mentioned squandering his wealth, but 84% observed that there was a famine. And we could go into the details and the surmising why that is that way. There's a difference in culture. There's a difference in background. We Americans are not very closely connected, thankfully, to a famine. It's not really in our psyche. We just don't pick up on it. The Russians had a different background. It's sort of like the famous or maybe infamous invisible gorilla test. I think Gideon alluded to that or talked about it here in the last year or so. But there was a test done over 20 years ago that was just a short video clip of 6 people passing a basketball to each other. How many have seen that? Just a few. So I'm going to spoil it for the rest of you. 3 people were dressed in white, 3 people were dressed in black. And The instructions were, count the amount of times the white people passed the basketball to each other. And so you're there, and they're, the people mill around, and they're, the black people are throwing the basketball, the white people are throwing the basketball. You're supposed to count the white people. And as I watched it for the first time, I was, Gideon showed it to me, I was watching, counting, and this black gorilla comes walking through the middle of them, and I keep trying to count the basketballs, and then he walks off, and the basketball, and then it ends, and he asks, how many times did they pass the ball? And I think I missed one or two. And then it was asked, did you see the gorilla? Yeah, I saw the gorilla. I didn't know what he was there for. And apparently about half the people see him and half don't, because you're watching for the basketball. Well, in my study of this, I went through this, went over this again, and I watched the video for the second time, and yeah, there comes the gorilla. Yeah, there he goes. I didn't even bother counting the basketball. The second search option popped up of another video that looked like some other college students doing the same thing. And so I clicked on that one. Yeah, white people pass the basketball. Here comes the gorilla, beats his chest in the middle, walks off, and yeah, I knew what was happening. And afterwards, they ask how many times the white people pass the basketball, and I, like, big deal. I didn't even count. I don't even know. And then they ask, did you notice one of the black players left the scene? And I'm like, no, I didn't. I thought I knew what was happening. Yeah, here comes a gorilla. There he goes. Yeah, they're passing the basketball. I didn't see one of them actually left. Plus, more than that, this color of the background faded from like a red to an orange. I didn't notice that either. So we think we know what's happening. I bring out these stories to illustrate the point. We read parables. We hear stories. When I read it the first time this morning, how many picked up on the famine? There are details that we know what's going to happen. We know what he's going to do. We know he's going to waste his money. We know he's going to come to the end of himself in a pig pen. We know the father is going to come out to meet him, bless his heart. And yet we miss important details like a famine. As I said, we as Americans don't relate very closely to a famine. What about your Irish here? Any famine in your history? I don't think that has, in 150 years or more, has left the psyche yet. Millions died and left the country, sometimes willingly, sometimes not. The Russians had a famine imposed on them through war in St. Petersburg. But to turn it personally, as I said, parables are metaphors. Parables are theological discussions. So how do we apply that? Are you experiencing a famine in your life? Maybe if it stood out to you, you are. What is a famine to us? It's, you know, physically speaking, it's a time of great need. Excuse me. It forces us to think of what really is important in life. And that's what the prodigal son did in the pig pen. He thought deeply what really is important. Usually we think of famine as a lack of food. And it can be physical. It can also be, famines can come in many different kinds of ways. Maybe a financial famine, social or spiritual. You might be able to identify one in your own life. But if that's the case, remember, let's define a famine again. Digging into this deeper, a famine is actually a collective experience. You don't experience a famine by yourself. notice in verse 14, it says there was a famine in the land. He wasn't the only one that was hungry. We all are part of a community. The son was part of his father's community before he left. He joined himself to a citizen of that country, it says. And he joined himself to another community in the far country. So when the famine hit, he came to himself. But remember, back to identifying a famine in our own life, if that's the case, you're not on your own. You're part of a community. If you feel you're in a famine, reach out to that community. We all need community. That's why we have them. That's why God established this social order. And so what we need to learn from the prodigal son is to do what he did. To return to our Father with humility and sincerity. Because in reality, a personal famine, what's that? It's actually would be starvation. On our own, we starve. Together, we might have a famine as a community, but at least we're together. The prodigal son had left his father's safe community. He went to a far country, and there he wasted his inheritance foolishly. His new community let him down. His new employer or slave owner let him down. Why couldn't he stay there? If he was part of the citizen of that country, he had something to do. His new owner, employer, whatever you want to call him, apparently didn't feed him very well. But it was the famine that helped him come to his senses. Remember, that's what famines do. They help us think deeply. But in that land, he was the only one who knew his father. Or he thought he knew his father. His father didn't act the way he expected him to. But he knew the right words to say. And his father knew a repentant son when he saw one, even from a long ways off. His father knew how to celebrate. In addition to dressing up his son, you know, ordering the robe and the ring and the sandals, he ordered a life to be shed. Blood was shed, a life was given for this important event. Again, as I said, all these elements are metaphors with theological meanings. And Jesus lets it up to us to assign those meanings. Different people might attach different meanings. But in summary, I'd like to say what we learned through this parable is that we all make mistakes. But we can learn what to do when we make mistakes. We all have made choices that are foolish, haven't we? I have. We've all wasted money, resources, time. We can identify with this younger son. We also learn the purpose of a famine. We learn how that when a famine strikes, they're actually allowed by our Father for the purpose to draw us closer to each other and, of course, bring us back to Him. In this parable, we also learn there are serious consequences to a life of sin. There's blood that is shed for our sin. There's a life that was given for our salvation. And our gracious Father knows how to celebrate our return. There's great rejoicing, and I don't think we have a clue how great that celebration, those celebrations are when a lost one is found, or will be when we all get there. Our Father, in this story we learn, does not reject us for where we have been, does not reject us for our past. He rejoices. Why? The lost has been found. It's not that he is so happy that we at last came to the end of ourselves. Come on, you finally copped on. No, the Father doesn't talk like that. He rejoices that we're found. He found us. He runs and finds us and sets off a celebration. As I said in the chapter, there are three parables of lost items. The first two are non-human. The third is human. But it's like the song, I sought the Lord, and afterward I knew it was not me, it was him seeking me. I'd like to end with a verse just a few chapters later in Luke chapter 19. You don't have to turn to it. Jesus told Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to this house, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. Let's bow for prayer.